This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Final hour of Bob, Groz, and Tom. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll eavesdrop. Somebody talking about Gonzaga would have been a number two if Tennessee had won the SEC tournament.
Yeah, you know what? We might end up playing something else. I don't know if I want to go there. I don't want to antagonize Gonzaga fans.
and Husky fans.
In addition to everybody
else. You're just going
to
antagonize every Washington State
basketball
fan.
Well, but I think that's what would have happened. I think that's what would have happened.
I agree. I mean, well, that's... Well, we'll listen to it anyway. What the heck?
By the way, you're a big fan of KJ Wright today.
Sorry.
That was a big conversation. I get it. You want to replay it? But I think we've done our part with that.
I don't want to replay KJ's interview again.
It was good.
It was really good. Yeah. I wouldn't blame you. But, yeah, so we'll figure out what we're going to eavesdrop on at the bottom of the hour. But let's go around the NFL. Let's do that. All right, story number one we touched on a bit. In case you missed it, Jordy Nelson, wide receiver, formerly of the Green Bay Packers, last year with the Oakland Raiders, is scheduled to make a visit to the Seattle Seahawks tomorrow.
Was John Schneider involved with the Packers when he was drafted?
I believe he was.
So that would be some of the natural interest there, and the fact that he's still a pretty productive player.
Yeah, last year on a bad Oakland team, 63 catches, 739 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 15 games. Now, 63 catches would have given him the team lead on the Seahawks team from last year. 739 yards would have put him second place behind Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, he suffered that devastating injury in 2015, missed the whole season, but man... From 2011 to about 2016, he was one of the elite receivers. Now, if you stick in one play, if you stick around Green Bay for long enough and you've got Aaron Rodgers throwing you passes,
you're
probably going to catch a lot of passes. You're going to rack up a lot of yards.
Remember, Aaron was none too pleased when they got rid of Jordan.
Yes.
That's right. He was his favorite target.
15 touchdowns, 15, 7, 8, 13, 14. I mean, this guy was as productive a player as the Packers have ever had at that position.
Mm. He'll be your third wide receiver here?
He'll be. He's 33. He'll be 34 in May.
You don't want to break the bank for him, but...
No, I mean, it would certainly be... Yeah, we like him at the right price. He's also got the, according to the story, per Adam Schefter, according to Brady Henderson, Patriots, Chiefs, Titans, and Raiders. So I guess the Raiders are still in the mix on some level.
He's got choices, you're saying.
That's right. So a potential bidding war for Jordy Nelson.
I don't think they'd cost him a draft pick, would he?
No, because I think he was released, right? He was cut?
You're right.
Yeah, released him last week.
I feel like they do need a little bit more at that position, though. If you look at it, Baldwin, Lockett, you're happy. David Moore.
I like
having him here. He was a touchdown machine at the beginning of the year.
He was interesting. It just felt like he would sort of disappear. I'm not sure. I guess he needs to prove, David Moore, that he can be a factor week in, week out. Not that he has to have a touchdown grab every single game, right. But felt like he had that stretch and then... I don't know if they started covering him differently and it became tougher. I mean, he's just got to show a level of effectiveness week in, week out, and I haven't seen that yet.
And Baldwin is coming off an injury, so.
A couple of them, yeah. This was a rough year for Doug, physically.
It's a position where you're looking to add, for sure.
I wonder, though, for some guys, if they're used to getting as many catches and targets as Jordy Nelson is, if he doesn't get that many, if it throws him out of his rhythm.
Fair
right?
Point.
I mean, can he just be a piece?
That'll be part of the interview process tomorrow, I would assume. Talking about his expectations, relaying what your expectations, what you're looking for versus what he expects. All right, is there a match?
Right.
I mean, he's,
I would say at this point in his career, he's accomplished most of his individual goals.
Yeah, I'm sure he probably at this point wants to win.
I don't mean, yeah, and I didn't mean that in terms of ego. How would it affect him if he's not getting thrown the ball? I just mean
as
far as his performance out there.
He's 6'3", 217, so... He'd be one of the bigger receivers on your team.
And I don't really think of him as a big guy, do you?
Not necessarily, but on this team, obviously Doug and Tyler are not big guys. Moore's a little bit bigger, and then I think Jaron Brown is around that size.
Right.
Jaron Brown. But he was really a non-factor last year. I don't know what their plans are for him. I know he signed.
Tell you what, he's not that much younger than Brandon Marshall. And I know that... Age doesn't dictate everything.
Well, completely different in terms of production. Marshall was done when he got here, basically.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm done being optimistic about that type of receiver being brought in here. Brandon Marshall, whoever
this,
else.
Don't you just look at this, though, as, yeah, it's a nice piece if they get him at the right. It's all about the price, the right price. And
yeah, but this would be a guy you'd absolutely expect to make the team and be productive.
Yes. Marshall, we were debating whether he had a spot on this roster. I mean, that's a flyer.
True.
Same with T.O. Same with Kellen Winslow. Braylon Edwards, to an extent. Any of those guys we listed before. I think the expectations would be slightly more for him, for Jordy Nelson.
Absolutely.
Vontaze Burfict. Guy who's suspended what feels like every single year.
He's
or
probably
justifiably so.
He's probably the most notorious player in the league, right?
Definitely.
He's certainly in that conversation if he's not. He's no longer part of the situation out there in Cincinnati.
7 years.
Cut by the Bengals. I would imagine he's going to get a job, though, because he could be effective when he could keep it all together on the field. But you have to question his IQ on the field at times. He doesn't make the best decisions.
He is a heck of a player. I mean, somebody's going to take a chance on him.
He's only 28, so he's arguably entering his physical prime right now.
Missed 18 games over the past 3 years.
Appeared in 75 regular season games with 73 starts. Suspended 4 games in 2018 for violation of the league's PED policy. Was suspended 6 games prior games for violations of player safety rules and fined many thousands of dollars. Most recently, $112,000 for multiple violations in a 2018 game against the Steelers.
So $470,000 total, the most fined player since 2012.
He was due to make $5 million this year base salary, up to $2.25 million in per-game roster bonuses. So the Bengals will absorb $1.8 million in terms of a cap charge by releasing him.
He's not a guy who I would expect the Seahawks to even look at.
No?
Really?
No.
I could see Pete Carroll looking at a problem
too.
Child saying, you know what? We like what he's capable of. There are things about his game that fit with what we do, and we feel like we can manage that personality.
I can hear him saying it.
You think we have – where is he going to go? Where is he going to play? Well, they got too many linebackers as it is. They've just overhauled their culture, and you're going to bring in Vontaze Burfict?
I don't know that they would, but I could see Pete saying, that's a guy I could work with him.
Theoretically. I just don't think on this team as it sits right now, the way it's built.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I could just hear him going for a guy like that.
If he were a D tackle – sure.
Yeah. His history.
Linebacker, though.
No. His history. Do I think the Seahawks are going to call him in here for a conversation? No. But his history would not preclude him from coming here if they had a hole, if they had a need
at
that
spot.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, I agree with that.
So, yeah, is it somebody they need right now? No. But would Pete Carroll look at his baggage, all the fines, all of that, and say, well, I'm not going to mess with that guy? No. I think he's absolutely the type of guy Pete Carroll would bring in and say, yeah, I love his competitiveness. He's just out there competing like crazy. Earl Thomas was prepared to sign a 1-year deal before the Ravens kind of swooped in out of nowhere. He was going to sign a deal with the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'd heard that.
Yeah, he said, that basically it was going to be a $12 million 1-year deal, guaranteed contract, with another million likely to be earned incentives with the Kansas City Chiefs. We're in the process of releasing Eric Berry. Kansas City had then signed Tyrann Mathieu, the 3-year, $42 million deal. The Ravens were never in the picture, is the quote from Thomas.
And sometimes life is like that.
Said I was shocked.
Yeah, you're hoping just to get a crumb, and then all of a sudden somebody swoops in and says, you know what, not only are we going to give you what you're expecting, we're going to give you 4 times that. Good for him. Kind of.
Said I was shocked, and I was blessed. Wasn't expecting that at all. He was completely resigned to the fact I'm going to have to stick around for this paltry $12 million.
Well, instead he got the biggest deal at any in terms of guaranteed money.
You know, as I was reading that article, I thought it was going to say something about I expected a 1-year deal and I thought the Seahawks were going to be in on it.
No, it doesn't mention them. The only conversation about the Seahawks was about the middle finger.
Right.
Yeah. He says he was sort of explaining. He was talking to Peter King. Explaining, he says, a lot of frustration that day. Says, I was in a battle with the team. I chose to play. I was betting on myself. So when it happened, it just added to my frustration. I did what I did. I saw Pete Carroll, and I was just like, you won. You won. A very disappointing day.
So now, you flipped him off?
That's a weird I understand heat of the moment. You're just, you know, who knows, you know, emotions going crazy, but feeling like Pete Carroll won. How's your head coach win when you break your leg?
Yeah, really.
That's a weird.
Well, because circumstances ended up favoring the organization and not him. And Pete Carroll was standing right there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a weird place to go mentally. And I can't relate to that level of competition, that much money on the line, feeling like you lost that much money. So it's hard to put yourself in that mindset. But to feel like, okay, look at me. Broke my leg. You won.
Did you just do that to me?
I did. Isn't that weird,
though? Like it just seems
a weird place for your mind to go, feeling like the coach is now satisfied. Like, uh-huh. Who's the winner? Pete Carroll is.
Well, you know, there's tension. It had been bubbling for months and months and months. Then that happens, and like you said, you understand the mindset
emotions.
Of somebody who gets injured.
I'm not going to go out of control.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend him doing that. But at the same time, with so much at stake, I can understand what was going through his head.
I guess, yeah. I just love that he was ready to accept the $12 million one-year offer from the Chiefs that was guaranteed with regrets. Guaranteed $12 million with another million likely to be earned from incentives. So you're looking at basically a $13 million deal guaranteed almost, except for that final million.
Expected with more.
With regrets.
You think Pete took any offense to that?
No.
Did he even notice?
In the moment? I don't even know if he was looking at him. I mean, who knows?
Hey, man, what are you doing?
Did they make eye contact? I'm not sure. But Pete's the first to dismiss any of that stuff.
He is. He did at the time.
Because when somebody flips me off, like when I'm driving around, I get real mad. I don't chase him or anything, but I get real mad. I take.
You don't go, umbrage. He's just having a bad day.
Yeah, I take a lot of umbrage. I take offense.
Take umbrage
whatever,
and offense.
Whatever word you want to throw out there. I get really mad at that.
Umbrage is a good word.
You never give umbrage, do you, Graz?
No, you only take it.
I take umbrage with your statement.
You think Dave Gettleman is the most interesting GM in the league?
I do.
Yeah?
Is there a more interesting GM out there than Dave Gettleman right now? Jerry Jones? He's nuts.
Jerry Jones?
Jerry Jones was actually thanking him the other day for trading him out of the division and the conference. For trading Beckham, I should say.
So
he's the most compelling story, for sure.
He addressed the media and obviously talked about Odell Beckham Jr. He said, talks were initiated by the Browns. John Dorsey knew we weren't just going to give Odell away. There was considerable back and forth. We didn't sign Odell to trade him, repeating what he had said 13 days prior to trading him. But things change. Another team made an offer we couldn't refuse.
There you go.
An offer that's being ripped by many analysts out there saying they could have and should have gotten more.
By everyone.
And they should have traded him long ago. We get that. But it didn't work. Plans changed. They gave him the offer he couldn't refuse. Boom.
He said, I completely understand why people would debate the merits of this deal. This trade really won't be able to be fully evaluated until we get further down the road. We did not enter this decision to trade Odell lightly.
That's
true. 2-14 and people will judge it.
Well, sure, they'll judge it. But, I mean, with all those draft picks, that's when you really do have to judge it. A couple years down the road.
Gettleman even get the chance of making those draft picks if they go 2-14?
Yeah.
You think so?
I do.
If they're a 2-win team this season, you don't think he's on the hot seat?
No.
Wow. See what happens there.
I think the owner, who we mysteriously have not really heard much from, John Mara, I think he's in lockstep with what's going on here. I really think.
You trade a player of that caliber that you've committed to. Yeah, you're not doing it without some sort of conference with, let's have a little powwow here and talk about what we're doing.
Right, plus forward. He's not stupid. He knows that whatever they're going to do with those draft picks, they're not all going to perform year one. You have to give them at least 2 years.
Gettleman went on to say, we have positions to address. Our plan is to address those positions, plain and simple. We'll do that through whatever means necessary. Gettleman on Eli Manning, quote, the narrative that Eli's overpaid and can't play is a crock.
No, it isn't.
It's a crock,
It's actually true.
It's bunk.
He's wrong about this one.
Gettleman on adding guys over the age of 30, quote, I have this crazy idea that age doesn't bother me. Said he looks to see if the guy can still play.
That is a crazy idea in the NFL, since it hadn't been a success with it over the hill gang since George Allen. 72.
This is the one I like. Gettleman on his plan. Quote, it's not my responsibility to tell you guys what I'm doing. It's not my job. It's not my responsibility.
See? He's crazy. He's the most interesting GM there is. Have you guys noticed, by the way, that whenever there's a story out there about Eli Manning, the accompanying picture for the article or the tweet is always a picture of Eli just looking totally clueless.
There's
like,
a lot of
like
those.
He always does.
That's kind of his resting face.
It is, but right now that face goes so well with what's going on here.
It sums it all up. Like, what's happening?
What?
What are you doing?
What's going on?
Gettleman said, quote, quitting on talent is when you cut a player or get marginal talent in return. Says he does not believe that is the case with Odell.
Okay.
And then the last one, trust me, we've got a plan. Everybody wants answers now. You got to trust me. You think Giants fans as a whole trust him?
No, definitely not.
You think Giants fans as a whole were disappointed with the Beckham trade or felt like, yeah, I get it?
I'd say 70-30, not in favor of the trade.
Yeah, he's on the hot seat, man.
Even before his upcoming 2-14 season.
Right, even before.
He might be on the hot seat, but whoever follows him is going to have to live with the situation that he's created.
But they also would come in with some level of slack saying, all right, you left me this plate of nonsense. I got to fix
it. Well, not necessarily. What if he makes really great draft picks and they win a Super Bowl? You're going to end up crediting the guy you just fired.
It's happened before.
Like with who? I was going to say Jack Cerenzik, but that didn't work out.
Well, wasn't that kind of what happened with Tony Dungy in Tampa Bay and John Gruden comes in and wins a Super Bowl?
Yeah, yeah, kind of. But Dungy had a lot of time to try and get them to a Super Bowl as the coach and couldn't do it.
But that team was assembled essentially by him, and Gruden came in and won. And
yeah.
Bill Callahan with the Raiders.
Yep, that was Gruden's team.
Gruden.
Final story is Russell Wilson making an appearance on Jimmy Fallon's show. So they hit on a few different things, started with his upcoming contract extension.
There's a possibility that you will be the highest paid quarterback in the history of the league.
Yeah. Well, that's a great potential of that. We'll see what happens.
Well, how does that make you feel good? I mean, is that cool?
Well, you know, it's not going to make me feel bad.
I mean. Yeah. But I mean, to think about, you know, Russell Wilson growing up and I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, being a kid, African-American kid, 5'11", coming from Richmond, Virginia, went to a private school. Everybody said I wouldn't make it playing Division I-A. And then getting to where I am now and just finishing year 7 and, you know, going into year 8, and I believe I have 10 to 15 more years left. You know, it's a blessing.
A lot of years.
You know, that jumped out to me before, and I didn't really say anything. When he points out that he went to a private school, is he trying to frame that as if it were a disadvantage to him or it was an advantage?
Sounds like a disadvantage.
How is that a disadvantage?
Maybe at a private school you don't have access to the same level of talent. You're not playing the same caliber of talent as a public school. You're drawing from a much smaller pond, if you will.
I guess, but you don't often hear
I didn't
people,
really get it.
You don't often hear people say I was at a disadvantage for going to a private school. Ask Lori Loughlin's kids how that's working.
I don't think it was picking on her. I don't think it was disadvantage. I think it's just you don't hear about maybe a lot of players coming from a private school.
Yeah.
He was asked if he'll be wearing a Giants uniform here soon.
There's a rumor that maybe you could be maybe signing with the New York Giants. I'm just saying, I just heard a rumor about
I'm not sure if it's we are in New York, but I'm not sure if the Seahawks are going to let me get away.
Yeah, no.
I love Seattle. I mean, Seattle's a special place. So, yeah, you know, been on to one Super Bowl there, go to two Super Bowls, multiple playoff games and everything else. And
I know, but, you know, you're still young. You got, you know, you should go.
Are you bribing me to New York?
No, I'm just saying, dude, travel. Travel's good for travel's good for the brain, dude. I think it'd be fun to have you here. You know, if you sign.
I did win a Super Bowl here.
Yeah.
So New York, New Jersey, it's been good.
Come on, dude.
Yeah, really.
It's good for the brain, dude.
I don't know if Russell's going to end up in New York, but there's no part of me that doesn't believe that he absolutely loves whatever courtship may be going on in New York.
Oh, I agree.
He loves that.
Certainly. Why wouldn't you?
At what point is he totally seduced by it?
Well, but at this point, it's not really up to him unless he just digs his heels in and says, I'm not signing anything with you guys.
Yep.
Right.
Because as he stated, Seahawks have his rights. They could franchise him for a couple of years. So he plays this year. They've got two more years after that. If they wanted to pay that price of that franchise tag, they can. I don't think they would.
Nothing to worry about.
Well,
nothing to see here.
I think it'd be way too punitive, is my point, that they'd absolutely try to get something worked out. They certainly could. They have the option. And then the most important cut from Russell Wilson was about somebody he's working with, a quarterback guru. a guru that many of you have become familiar with.
In addition, we have RWQB, which is kind of an all-year-round thing rather than just one day or whatever. It's all-year-round where a guy who played with me before, Jake Heaps, who's actually helping run the camp and directing the camp, all year round, he played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with me, was in the fire. He really knows what he's doing. You know, these guys, quarterback gurus. Well, he's really a guru. He really played the game.
I kind of like that, just dismissing those other people that people call gurus. He's really a guru.
Forget about him.
Very cool for Jake.
Yeah, this guy's the real deal. Those other guys, yeah.
That's why we have him on every Wednesday, people.
That's right.
Yep. We were early on that train.
Yeah, you want to hear from a guru. You tune in every Wednesday here
said
with Bob
and Graz. You know what we really need on the show is a guru every week.
Or a real
one.
They call the other guys that, but this is...
The show of record identified him long before the rest.
He's established himself.
Not one of these other witch doctors.
So there you go. There's a little trip around the NFL for you. Good stuff from Russell. Meanwhile, what are we going to listen to? Is it KJ Wright?
No, it's not KJ Wright.
What do you keep? Was that in your?
That's what I wrote on the.
He's written it a couple times today on the sheet, so it made me feel like, you know what? He really enjoyed that interview.
Yeah.
He really liked it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about how circumstances could have been different for the other team in this state, in this tournament.
That's coming up with Bob Graz and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob Graz and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Golf Tango, the line is in. It's time now for the eavesdrop.
It is the eavesdrop here with Bob Graz and Tom, where we take a listen to something somebody said somewhere about stuff. Today we've got Joel Corey, who was on with John Clayton, right? Today?
Correct.
Talking about a few different things with the Seahawks. One of them about interesting take on Frank Clark, saying, you know what, don't sleep on the fact that he could be a one-year rental player this year, essentially. And maybe there is no long-term deal in the offing because of the depth of the draft.
Yeah, it can be done because an edge rusher is the second most valuable position in football behind quarterback. But if there's ever a year to hedge your bets in anticipation of Frank Clark not being around long-term and you're just renting him for the time being, it's this year. Deep draft for defensive linemen, and you could potentially get a guy in the second round that's a first-round talent because you have so much depth at the defensive line, particularly edge rusher, I haven't seen in quite some time.
Mm. So they bite the bullet this year and just take the salary cap hit, which is what it would be,
right?
Having to pay that because all of that goes in. So 17 point whatever it is will count against your cap this year. He'd be a very expensive player this year, but past that, he's, you know, implying, hey, you could get somebody who's got that ability even in a second round, and you be like you were before, paying guys $600,000 a year as opposed to 17 and a half a year over 5 years or 4 years or whatever his deal ends up being.
What's more important, though, because Frank Clark is the centerpiece of your defense. He's the leader, right?
Right.
Him and Bobby Wagner. But Clark is a huge, huge part of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you could get a guy at equal ability in the draft and you end up paying a lot less, like you were just talking about, would you go for that and let your leader eventually
walk? If you knew
walk?
He was going to be that kind of player?
Yeah.
If you knew, for sure.
Yeah. But
any position.
You just never do. You never know for a fact. You feel like, hey, all the signs are there. We talked to the kid. He's got his head on straight. The game tape tells us he's a gamer. There are no questions about his character, his work ethic. Still doesn't give you any sort of guarantee whatsoever. You like your chances.
Well, if they draft the guy in the second round and have Clark stay on the franchise tag,
you get a year to figure it out.
You got a year to figure it out.
I mean,
right.
These guys will play
now,
they are.
They don't have a second round pick, so that's assuming they trade away that first round pick. but I wouldn't be totally opposed to it. If they had that level of confidence in player A, whoever that player is, right?
Yeah.
He is everything Frank Clark is, and he's got the ceiling, and he's younger, and we've got control, and he'll be obviously decidedly cheaper. If they've got that kind of faith in a player, and they're just nowhere close. If there's a massive gap between what they feel like Frank Clark is worth and what he's asking for, and you've got to think about Bobby Wagner, you've got to think about Russell Wilson, you've got to sign these guys.
You do.
So maybe this gives them an out and feel much more comfortable about how they're going to deal with Wagner and Russell if Frank Clark's not part of the equation in that sense.
Frank Clark is an interesting case, though, because, I mean, let's roll it back. Let's say it were the same situation a few years ago with, say, Richard Sherman on his first contract, his first big contract he got. If they thought, hey, you know what, there's a lot of cornerbacks coming up in this draft, what do we do?
Well, I mean, I think that's a little bit different in that I think Sherman, by the time he was up for his big contract, was
the best corner in the league.
Yeah.
Or,
Frank
or
Clark
at least,
is not the best edge rusher in the league. He had a great year and is a terrific player, but...
And among the free agents, he's way up there.
Sure.
Maybe not the best. But
yeah, you're right. He's not viewed as, hey, he's J.J. Watt. He's Khalil Mack. He's not talked about in those.
Richard Sherman was a game changer for this team.
Yeah, right. Richard was considered, all right, at the time, is it him? Is it Revis? Right? That was the conversation.
So then, what you guys are saying then, it sounds like Clark is, since Clark is not that type of player, the absolute best in the league at his position, maybe you do think about.
Yeah, if what Joel Corey is saying is accurate.
If that's true, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big if. You're betting on potential. You don't have any knowledge of what any of these guys are going to be. You gather as much information as you can and then...
You don't, but again...
Cross your fingers and hope for the best.
I think the Seahawks have shown that they would rather keep guys that have proven it.
It feels that way.
In their
system already.
It feels like
I mean, look, Frank Clark was the guy that they drafted, right?
Mm-hmm.
So... It's the same situation, what, 5 years ago.
They've How many already, guys did they let walk away guy. For a second contract that they really liked?
None, really. Except Tate, maybe?
Maybe. Maybe Golden Tate. Maybe been the last time that happened.
I mean, Paul Richardson. But again, he was never
elite.
An elite
he had one
player.
Good year.
Yeah, exactly.
He had one good year.
Yeah.
So I think that
and
was...
we knew that was coming.
Yeah, and I think he priced himself out. The deal he got was above what they wanted to pay.
Right.
So
J.R. Sweezy.
Same thing.
Yeah. Corey also talked about Russell Wilson's soon-to-be signed deal, we hope. Said it's better to get this done sooner than later.
So this is going to be a deal which resets the landscape temporarily because you're going to see a deal maybe not in 2020, maybe in 21. If Patrick Mahomes is remotely close to what he was this past season, he could be the first, I don't know, $40 million per year guy. So whatever you get, the sooner you do Russell, the better it's going to be from a cap planning standpoint. And also it'll be cheaper because the longer you wait, there'll be other deals which come into play. You get a healthy Carson Wentz, who the Eagles do. It's going to be way up there. I can't see the Rams doing Jared Goff for something, any rate, anything remotely close to Jimmy Garoppolo. So those deals will affect the marketplace as well.
Yeah, Russell.
But you know who knows that is Russell Wilson's people.
Yeah, very likely he could be the highest paid player in the league for
a minute.
Few months.
Yeah.
You know, and he's right.
If he signs early, he would be.
He's right about Mahomes. I mean, you know, we talked about it earlier. Russell made that comment with Jimmy Fallon that he'd like to play another 10 years, 15 years. 10 years from now, we were kind of joking that, well, he could be looking at $50 million a year for an elite quarterback. Well, he's talking about Patrick Mahomes in just a couple of years looking at $40 million. So 10 years from now, it could be well over $50 million a year.
I think Russell Wilson's guys are aware of that, and that's why I don't think he signs early.
What did he mean when he said Goff's not going to get what Garoppolo did?
Well, Garoppolo was the highest paid player in the league for about 14 minutes.
Right, but couldn't Goff when his deal
comes I don't think they think
up?
Goff is, he's not putting him on the same level, even though Jared Goff's got more of a resume than Garoppolo does.
But it almost doesn't matter. When it comes to your quarterback, if you believe in him, I mean, he's going to have to be the highest paid player. I mean, Flacco was that exact situation after he won that Super Bowl. Nobody thought he was the best quarterback in the league.
Nope.
But
he had the best playoff. And
right. They had to pay him like that for just to keep him.
Yep.
That's the way it is.
Yep. One more from Joel Corey talking about the Seahawks and feeling they're going to have to make Russell the highest paid player.
If you're going to franchise me, and if you go non-exclusive, you're already at like almost 30.4 because of you redoing his contract with the restructure and pushing up his 2019 cap number a couple of years ago. So it's going to go 120% off of that. But typically you give an exclusive tax. That's going to be right around $31 million. His agent is no dummy. He's going to go, well, $31 million times 120%, that's basically $37 million. I can make $68 million, and then third franchise tag is over $50. So he's already got $68 million in the bank. In 2020 and 2021. So you're going to have to make him the highest paid player in the league, probably the first $35 million per year guy, to avoid him going the year-to-year route and then being like Kirk Cousins.
So if they went franchise tag in those years, in 2 years you'd spend $68 million on
At
Russell
least.
Wilson and not be able to spread any of that out. That's
that could be more than that.
Well, he's just he's assuming what the franchise tag is, 120% of your salary of the highest paid players. He's right. I mean that is beyond punitive to your salary cap. So yeah, they have that option. They can do it. He's gonna be immensely wealthy just off of those two tags if that were to happen.
But he won't get the hug. He won't get the hug. I mean, when you franchise tag a guy, it's different from extending him and giving him a long-term deal and saying, right. Hey, you're our guy and we love you and we're doing that. I mean, when you give him a prank, it's like just throwing cash at somebody and saying, all right,
I feel like it's a little different with the quarterback position because that, I don't feel like they assume the same level of risk of my career could be over tomorrow. Not that it couldn't. They're still in a contact sport, the way a running back does, the way a defensive end does or linebacker. You feel like, man, or the way Earl felt, you know what?
Look, their quarterback's still protected.
Yeah, I mean, and every year it feels like more and more steps are being taken to protect guys at that position. So I think they're more likely to feel okay, just like Kirk Cousins was.
Yep.
You didn't hear him complaining at all. He was like, hey, that's fine. I'm making truckloads of money. It's guaranteed for that year.
But you know what? Next year. With Russell Wilson, it seems to me that being the highest paid player in the league for in whatever moment that occurs is really important to him. Well, I don't know that with Cousins he earned the right to say that because he's never been considered one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Highest paid. I think long-term contract.
Long-term, something.
Which is probably the same thing. But I think it's be a big deal if they franchise tagged him just because of what he has already done for the organization where Kirk Cousins hadn't done anything like that.
Exactly.
I guess it depends on why they're doing it. If they're just not dealing with you, they're saying, listen, we don't know if we want to commit to you or if you guys have been, you know, his reps and them have been together night in, night out, and hey, we're up against the deadline here. We're just not making progress. Yes, we want you. You want to be here. We want you to be here. But your demands versus our budget, that gap is not going to close or it's not getting close to being done. So this is the necessary step right now. It's not a signal we don't want you. It's a signal that, man, we don't have the time to close this gap.
You and I understand that, but does he take it that way?
You take it as an offense. It's an affront.
A personal affront.
How important am I to you?
Right.
Is there someone more important than I am to your team's success?
Does that mean he'd take umbrage with it?
Definitely.
We'd definitely take umbrage.
Okay. We're going to come back. We'll sum it all up next with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time to sum it up with Bob Gross and Tom.
Brought to you by Heritage Distillings BSB, Brown Sugar Bourbon.
The final word every day on the show of record at 2:45.
Curtis just brought up a great point back there. Curtis, you can jump on if you want.
You did.
You watched the tournament selection show. And by the way, I compliment CBS because yesterday they were a lot more concise. They trimmed a lot of the fat out of that show.
It was only an hour long.
Right. They went, the second that show started, Gumbel launched right into, hey, we're going to the East Region.
They did.
Duke, and they went right through it. There was no messing around. But, and I noticed this a little bit yesterday, so they go through each game, and you notice that it's either every game or every other. Either Seth Davis or Clark Kellogg will give you a little tidbit about the coach or what they did in their conference tournament. Yeah, nobody expected them, but they made a run through the Atlantic 10, and boom, here we are. But what did Clark Kellogg say about Liberty?
At one point, Clark Kellogg was talking about Liberty's first-round matchup, and he goes, yeah, I've been watching Liberty all season long. No, you haven't. You have not been watching Liberty at all. No one has. They're on, like, ESPN 5, okay? No one knows what Liberty's played like.
Yeah, and I don't blame these guys for it. Look, they make a note about every team and they whip through it, but nobody's watched every one of Liberty's games.
Nope. They may have seen a little bit of them in their tournament championship game.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, it's a weird show, but I thought yesterday it was better than it's been in recent years for that reason. They burned right through every one of them.
They do a good job. I think ESPN does a good job.
Yeah.
It's one of those shows about, and it's about teams getting in place. No action, but it's got a lot of action.
What the show itself?
Yeah.
Because there's so much movement.
There's so much movement going on.
And if you're a team, if you're a fan of a team that's waiting for an at-large bid, you think you might be in, might not be. I think the thing about yesterday's tournament, or the unveiling of it, there weren't too many surprises as far as teams being in or out. Arizona State, I was a little surprised that they got in, but they're in a play-in game, essentially.
Yeah, there's always some, but there. I mean, how did you feel about Indiana not getting in?
I didn't think they had any business in this tournament.
Yeah, I mean,
had they won their, had they gotten to the final of the Big Ten tournament, that would have been one thing. They would have had a heck of a resume, a lot of losses, but a good resume. But they lost. Well,
Texas
had the
same kind of resume, and they were a 500 team. I mean,
yeah,
it. I do agree with you. It did not seem as though it was as controversial in terms of the last four in, the first four out this year.
And I don't know as much about VCU and UCF. I mean, I know a little bit about them because they got that player who's, what, like 18 feet
tall? Taco Falls, 7'6".
Right, exactly. But as far as the seeding of those teams, I can't really complain too much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I thought they did a great job yesterday, except for Clark Kellogg claiming to have watched every one of Liberty's
games. All year.
What are they, a 16 seed?
No, they're a 12.
They're a 12, yeah.
Liberty's a 12?
They are.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
All right, Curtis, how'd you feel about ASU getting it?
I mean, that's kind of typical for them getting into the first four. If they're right. If they were worth any kind of salt, they'd get into the actual field. But, you know, congrats to them.
Yeah, Pac-12 got three in.
Even though they're in, a little insult attached to that.
Wait, would you rather be a 13 seed definitely playing on the opening game?
Yes.
Than an 11 playing 2 days and losing before that?
Going to Dayton?
Yeah, why would you want
to? Who wants to go to Dayton?
It's a weird system. In that way, I'd rather be a 13 or a 14 if I'm one of those teams rather than.
I think the matchup that I don't like is the 16-16 matchup, which is the two schools that are likely to be one and done anyway. Mm. And you tell them that this is their NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the 11, you know, those seeds getting in there. They're normally major conference teams who had the chance to do better and didn't. But the ones who are in there just barely anyway because of an automatic bid situation. It's not even being in the tournament.
I understand your point. It's just if you're a 16, I mean, how deserving are you to begin with?
Well, Maryland, Baltimore County.
I know. I knew you were going to say that.
Of course.
I think we'll ever see that again. 16 seed beating a one.
Yes.
What if it happened to Virginia 2 years in a row?
Well, you know, Virginia kind of they were sailing along, and they're a number one seed again, obviously. Yeah. But Florida State, you know, bounced them
right
out of that ace before they got to the ACC championship game. And you guarantee you that their fans are, uh-oh.
I know. And by the way, with all the criticism I've given Gonzaga over the past couple of weeks, I've thrown out a team just incidentally that could pick Gonzaga off in the second or third round. I've thrown out Florida State a few times. They're right there in that region with them.
Hey, I tell you what, Syracuse is going to be very tough for them in the second round if they wind up with them.
They're an eight, right?
Yeah, they'd be their second round opponent if they get there. With that 2-3 zone, the Gonzaga struggled against Washington with that.
Syracuse is always a dangerous tournament team. They're a team. If I'm a fan of them, I almost don't care what their seed is.
Liberty's playing Mississippi in the first round.
Ole Miss. Okay.
Ben Howland. No, Ben Howland's a Mississippi State. Forgive me.
Right. They're a five.
Right. As is Mississippi.
Okay. Bob, anything?
No, I agree with all of that.
Okay.
I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know. I don't get as invested into these into the seedings as you guys do.
Well, you don't have to talk about that. You can sum it up with the Mariners. You got Ichiro, Jody Nelson, whatever you want.
I was not trying to change the subject you guys were in your conversation with. Talking about Liberty, which everybody was clearly invested in, and Mississippi State, Mississippi.
We don't talk Liberty basketball on this show. We're
listen, Clark Kellogg has watched every game, as you should have. You would have known what he was saying was fact because he's seen them all.
I wish I could break down Liberty basketball better, but we can't get Clark Kellogg on the show.
Well, you could get
he's too busy watching Liberty games.
You could get ESPN5, the Cinco, and watch it like he does. You're just fine.
The Cinco.
All right, that does it for us. I want to thank our guest, Bob Valvano, college basketball analyst. Good stuff from him. If you missed any of today's show, just go to 710sports.com, click that podcast button, and scroll down to our picture and click on that. And everything you missed is waiting for you right there each and every single day. We're going to be back with you tomorrow right here with Bob, Groz, and Tom.
A role play group? What would a role... What would...